Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And I want to share all my love with you.
Hour three on a Wednesday. And the reason why executive producer Marshall Parker is playing the duet from Lionel and Diana of Endless Love is because Happy Gilmore just came on television. Of course, friends can listen to Endless Love in the dark. Your love. Break the rule that I've always said, which is never going to be singing on the radio. Very good stuff. Very good stuff from producer Marshall. Telephone number to call, 404-741-0929. We've gotten on a lot of topics, covered a lot of ground so far over the opening 2 hours. In addition to the items already mentioned in the update, Major League Baseball All-Star Game earlier this evening, the American League over the National League 4-3. The MVP was Shane, don't call me Justin Bieber. He struck out the side in the fifth inning for the American League, representing the home team Cleveland Indians. He's the first home player since 1999 and Pedro Martinez to win, first home pitcher, I should say, to win the MVP in his home ballpark. So first time in 20 years that that's happened. Major League Baseball on Fox incorrectly administered that as Freddie Garcia in 2001, when, of course, that was the Seattle All-Star Game where Cal Ripken played his final All-Star Game, and he won the Most Valuable Player Award. Among those from the Braves in the game, not real big showings when it comes to the offensive numbers. Freddie Freeman 0-for-1 with a walk. Ronald Acuna Jr. struck out twice in his only plate appearances. Mike Soroka did pitch a scoreless inning, perfect inning, in fact, on 10 pitches. Four of them were strikes. He ends up turning in a scoreless outing. Other highlights, Charlie Blackmon hit a solo home run for the National League representing the Rockies. The Mets' Pete Alonso for the National League, a 2-RBI single. Michael Brantley, the former Indian, had an RBI back in his old ballpark. He now, of course, plays for the Houston Astros. And Joey Gallo homered for the American League representing the Texas Rangers. Earlier today, though, Commissioner Rob Manfred spoke out against the pitchers who seem to have a beef with the baseball. And it's in response to the comments made by Justin Verlander, echoed by Jacob DeGrom, echoed by Max Scherzer, and noticed by anybody with a brain who has asked a pitcher in Major League Baseball and hitters in Major League Baseball and those who are scientifically trained to examine the baseball, there's something different going on. But if you ask the commish, he seems to be somewhat ambivalent, somewhat absent-minded. And quite honestly, he sees your juiced baseball argument, and he says, no, not true.
When there was the first spike in home runs, we got an independent group of scientists to study the manufacturing process, to study the ball, tell us exactly what was going on. They finished their report. We made it public. And then when this year, you know, it kind of started up again with the home run rate. And, you know, we said publicly, we know the ball has less drag. We need to get better at managing the way the ball's going to perform in advance of the season.
He chose poorly.
I believe it was Frank Caliendo who did the Al Pacino bit when he was doing one of his impersonations of Al Pacino. He said, "You, sir, are a liar. Liar, liar, your pants are on fire." That wasn't my Al Pacino. That was just me appropriating the quote.
It's not a lie if you believe it.
Thank you, George. I don't really get why they're trying to stand on this denial. I really don't. Because in my mind, we all can see it. Major League Baseball is on pace to obliterate by about 500 home runs the all-time record, which was set 2 years ago. The aforementioned spike that Commissioner Manfred mentioned in his clip. And Justin Verlander, who basically told ESPN that, quote, the balls being used this season are a blanking joke, and that believes that 100% Major League Baseball has implemented juiced balls to increase offense, as the starter for the American League in the All-Star Game, has allowed a major league leading 26 home runs. Now, granted, he plays in a ballpark that has the short porch with the Crawford boxes at 315 feet, but the ones he's given up this year are not wall scrapers. And as a result, has an ERA under 3. Daryl Strawberry said this also in published comments earlier today, where he believes that the change in offense has to do with more of the hitters outperforming the pitching from the standpoint of the fact that there are not that many high-end pitchers left in baseball.
You smell like a winner!
But the other part of this is that why do we see offense go to die in October? Well, more of the teams that end up getting into the playoffs have more concentrated high-end pitching. And I wonder what the new proposed rules, and he even said this in his State of Major League Baseball address earlier this week, is that he's trying to push for the players' union to approve the measure that will force teams beginning as soon as next year to have a 3-batter minimum for relievers, a.k.a. getting rid of the specialized use of pitchers, the loogies, if you will, left-handed one-out guys, and the right-handed specialists, the dusty knuckles, Chad Bradford-type pitchers, the people who can only get batters out from one side of the plate. I think that that particular advent is helpful because it could speed up the pace of play. But could that have another detrimental outlook on offense? And in my view, I look at this from the standpoint of a fan, and I'm asking the fan, do you want the offensive infusion that we've seen? Do you care? Is your baseball viewing affected by this phenomena? 404-741-0929. We had one caller earlier say it's because of the bats. The fact that the bats are being made with more concentrated wood. The mechanics of the swing have completely changed over the course of time, which is odd because when I was growing up and playing baseball, I basically had all these uppercut swings like all these players had, and it didn't do me any good. I couldn't hit a curveball to save my life. I was a right-handed, light-hitting first baseman, which is an oxymoron because you're not supposed to be light-hitting as a first baseman. I was a light-hitting catcher for the longest time until they moved the 90-foot bases, and then that did me in. But Sports Radio, 92.9, the mechanics of the swing, though, are a lot different. There are a lot more different scenarios that are put in place for players who have the uppercut swing, who change their mechanics in order to change the sign of the times. But I don't understand exactly how we got here other than by the fact that we have a different baseball. And the fact that at AAA, they've noticed the change and the uptick in offense in a league that normally has an uptick in offense anyway, but it's even more pronounced this year, and the players notice a difference. They notice a difference in the seams. They notice a difference in the leather. They've cut the ball in half and noticed the pill. There's a little bit of also less drag on the baseball as well. And all these factors combined together have led to more offense, and yet Rob Manfred, taking a page out of his predecessor Bud Selig, like he had during the steroid era, and saying, hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. We did get one good thing, despite the fact that we didn't get any offense out of the All-Star game, which, of course, brings you people who are the people who are opponents to this moniker of no juiced balls. We did get one interesting advent as we got a bunch of players not only wearing mics, but also wearing earpieces to talk to the broadcast booth. We saw it a little bit last year, but it was taken up another notch this year where we had Freddie Freeman of the Atlanta Braves actually talking to the broadcast crew while taking an at-bat.
Here we go. First at-bat ever with the thing in my ear.
Oh, they're using multiple signs, Freddie. Darn it.
Not. Hey! I've never taken a heater in my life. Man, that was hard, guys.
Hey! Oh, that was unfair, Freddie.
Wow.
Strike, guys?
It was a strike.
All right.
And I'm a pitcher, so I'm being fair.
I'm back here then.
Wow.
Here comes the high heater.
Oh! Oh.
Who's swinging the bat?
No, well, throw a strike. He told me to swing the bat.
That was a good take, Freddie.
Thanks. Thanks, guys. I really thought he was going heater there.
Three!
Got him with a breaking ball, Freddie. You're a prince for doing that.
Now, that you can do that in a game that doesn't count. And I think, again, the fact that Major League Baseball now no longer has the All-Star game counting has forced Fox and the broadcasters of the game to at least reevaluate, okay, how do we make this interesting? And that is interesting. But I almost want to know if we could figure out a way to get this happening in a real game. Although it did rear its ugly head, I believe it was Yelich in the outfield or somebody in the outfield on a ball in the gap that he kind of pulled up lame because he was talking to the broadcasters in the booth and you could hear him running and it actually ended up scoring a run for the American League. So it could have a negative effect, but we see, you know, in the NBA, we see coaches mic'd. We see players mic'd sometimes in the NFL. I'm wondering if we're going to get to a point where, because again, we've talked about this before, Major League Baseball needs as much help as it can possibly get when it comes to marketing its superstars. And when you think about the fact that we saw an amazing youth infusion, not just with this All-Star game, but with the Home Run Derby specifically, especially when you look at the final between Pete Alonso and Vlad Guerrero Jr. and, of course, Ronald Acuna of the Braves being in the semifinal. Could this be the next step, maybe being something that's implemented in, say, a nationally televised contest that actually means something? I don't know. It's an idea. I'm open for every idea possible that gets more eyeballs on baseball. We'll come back and switch gears drastically. Frank Schwab of Yahoo Sports did his Falcons offseason preview a couple of days ago. I'll ask him what he thought about the Falcons offseason and what he thinks might go better for them in 2019. Sports Radio 99 The Game.
Guess what? I got a fever, and the only prescription is more cowbell.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com. We now head down to the WadeFord.com hotline. We're joined by Frank Schwab, Yahoo Sports, as he gives us kind of his rundown. He's been doing his preview of all 32 teams in the NFL season, and he's been counting down the teams in reverse order of his 2019 power rankings, and he got himself to the Atlanta Falcons. And so I start by asking you, Frank, you know, the 2018 Falcons season was a peculiar one. How are you forecasting 2019? Is it a reversal of fortune? Because it seemed like so much of the fortune did not go their way in 2018.
Right. And I think that there's an optimistic view where they bounce back. I was really high on them coming into last year. I thought they were really, really loaded on both sides of the ball, and it just didn't play out that way. It was, there were the injuries. I get that. I totally get that. You lose both safety, you lose Deion Jones. That affects everything. But I don't think that accounts for everything. If you look at the whole, there were teams that had more injuries. And for the Falcons to go 7-9, and I wrote in most of my preview about this, for the Falcons to go 7-9 with Matt Ryan having a legitimately great season, how much better can Matt Ryan be? And how much better can your offense be? It's hard for me to believe Matt Ryan built on what he did. and yet the Falcons were still 7-9, and not even a particularly unlucky 7-9. They were 4-9 and won three meaningless games at the end. So I see, I understand that there's a ceiling with this team that's very high, much higher than I had them. I had 19. But I also just, this year coming into it, I kind of say, how does this team get much better? How does this team really, truly improve that much? And I don't really have a great answer for that.
It's weird because Ryan, two out of the last 3 years, has had just 7 interceptions in each of those two seasons. The one odd year was 2017, where he threw 12, and he had 35 or better touchdowns in two of the last 3 seasons. Is he more of the 2016 or 18 quarterback, or more the 2017 quarterback like we saw 2 years ago?
Oh, I think he's more 2016, 2018. The 2016 season was ridiculous. I mean, he might not be to that level, but he's a very good top 10 quarterback in my mind. He is one of those guys who, you know, it doesn't matter what coaches he has, doesn't matter who's around him. He's going to make guys better. He is an excellent, excellent quarterback. And again, it just bewilders me a little bit that he could play as well as he did last year on the whole, and they still go 7-9. You know, as I kind of pointed out in the beginning of that preview, it's the greatest season ever for a quarterback in a losing team. I mean, it's never really happened like that before, and I used a bunch of stats to illustrate the point. So I think Matt Ryan's a very, very, very good quarterback, and I think that if you're going to be positive about the Falcons this year, that's where it starts. You say, okay, every team's looking for an elite quarterback, and Matt Ryan, I don't know if he's elite, if he's just on the other side of elite, whatever you want to argue where that line is, but he's very, very good. Most teams would love to have him, and he provides the foundation and the hope that the Falcons, yeah, maybe they can turn it around and be right back in play.
You know, this is the time of year where a lot of the, you know, silly season discussions come about, and one that's kind of been prevalent on our station here the last week, Frank, is, you know, is Matt Ryan Hall of Fame level yet? Can he get there? Where do you think he is in terms of amongst the elite all time, and how close is he, at least in your mind, to being somebody who can wear that Hall of Fame blazer in Canton?
Right. I think he's very, very close. I mean, this is going to hurt, but I mean, if Super Bowl 51 goes a little differently, he's in. And he's a lock right now if they end up finishing that game. I wonder, the one guy I think about and I compare him to, as far as, like, you know, how the Hall of Fame is going to view them, is Donovan McNabb. And I think McNabb had a great career. I think he was really, really excellent for a long time, but no Super Bowl ring. And that does matter to the voters, whether I agree with that, whether you agree with that, whether anybody else agrees with that. Getting a ring kind of gets you in. I mean, that's not for like a Joe Flacco or Trent Dilfer, but that's kind of the thing that nudges you over the finish line. And I'm not sure Matt Ryan has that right now. I think he's really close. If he has a few more good years like he's had, just the counting numbers are going to look so good that he might get in. I think he's going to be a very interesting debate right now. And it kind of stinks for him, because if that Super Bowl turns out differently, he's pretty much a lock right now. I mean, it'd be hard to find many guys who have had his kind of longevity, an MVP and a Super Bowl, and not get in the Hall of Fame. So I think he's right on the edge right now. Probably needs a few more good years. A Super Bowl will clinch it for him, but that's tough to predict. It's tough to predict any team win a Super Bowl in the small amount of window Matt Ryan has left.
The initial 2019 power rankings of Yahoo Sports have the Falcons ranked 19th in the league, and one of their writers, Frank Schwab, joining us here, man who wrote the preview on the Falcons 2019 season, joining us on the WaitForIt.com hotline on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game with me, Will Pelagic. So about what's in front of Ryan, I mean, he was hit almost as many times as he's been at any point in his career this past year. They made some strides in the draft and in the offseason to at least shore up the offensive line. There's nowhere to go but up for them. How much do you think they fortified that unit?
Oh, I mean, they had to get better. I mean, you know, you look at their offseason and the way the salary cap broke down, the way the draft broke down, they basically had 4 chips to play. I mean, it's, you know, legitimate, not your depth forward type of free agency moves or your late round picks, but 4 legitimate chips to play, and they put every one of them on the offensive line. Now, I get it. I mean, the offensive line was their weakness last year by far. I mean, it just fell apart. And, you know, you can't get your quarterback hit 102 times again. You don't want that to happen. You want to have a running game to balance things out. But I do wonder if, you know, maybe not all 4 chips on the offensive line, maybe 3, and you go get a cornerback, or you go get a defensive lineman. You know, I mean, if there are some other needs they had. I don't know if they addressed them as well as I would have liked them to address that, but I kind of understand it. the line has to be better. Two first-round picks, two free agent signings. Not all these guys are going to start because Mack and Matthews are still there, but they definitely improved in that area. They had to improve in that area. And obviously, Dimitroff and Quinn viewed it as, hey, if our offensive line, if we're better up front, everything else feeds off of that. We're going to be a better team as a result. And I don't doubt that might be the case. It's just one of those things where it was an interesting way to attack the offseason, basically fixing one area and ignoring the rest.
You know, Frank, you mentioned somebody who had an amazing 2016 season in the year that went to the Super Bowl with Matt Ryan. Another guy who had an amazing year on the defensive side was Vic Beasley, and then ever since, he's kind of fallen off. This is a big year for him, obviously, contract year. What are you expecting out of him? Because many people believe that if he doesn't have a good enough season, it might be his last in Atlanta. And if he does, it might also be his last in Atlanta.
Yeah, it's a great way to put it. I read stuff from my friend, D'Orlando Ledbetter and all them out there talking about how maybe Beasley's looking at new pass rush moves, get a little more of a repertoire. And it does seem like he stagnated a little bit. It seems like he had that magical 2016 season. And it's just kind of, well, what's the next step? It kind of teams may figure out a little bit for him that he's a speed guy, he's a great speed guy, but he doesn't have a counter punch. So maybe just getting older, wiser, adding that to your game. It is a big year for him. He should be motivated. I assume he is. If he comes in and pulls double-digit sacks, if Atlanta doesn't use a franchise tag on him at that point, he's going to have a huge day in free agency because those guys are so tough to find. And he might have a huge day anyway because he hasn't looked back at that 2016 and chase it. I mean, that's how important edge pass rushers are. So I think there's a huge year for the Falcons, for Beasley, just to figure out, okay, hey, here's your market. Are we going to pay that or not? If not, you pat him on the back and say, hey, thanks for the 5 years. I don't know which way it's going to go with him. It's tough to say. He obviously has a talent, but it hasn't shown up the last couple of years. It's obviously a huge pivotal year for his career.
Inside the microscope and then widening it here, Frank, as we're talking with Frank Schwab of the Yahoo Sports NFL Insider, joining us on the WaitForIt.com hotline. This is Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We talk Falcons offseason. Ricardo Allen said that he believes that this defense is a top 10 defense when healthy. Without having everything in front of you, Frank, do you believe him?
No. No, I just can't get behind that. I don't think that this defense is good enough to be that. They do have some pieces, obviously. Almost any team, you can concoct the best-case scenario where everything clicks. Vic Beasley plays like he did in 2016, and Tack, it improves upon his 7 sacks last year. And Deion Jones plays like Luke Kuechly, and he's a great player. I don't really foresee that from these guys. I mean, they don't necessarily need to be top 10 either. Top half of the league, and you're creating turnovers, and you're really relying on your offense to get in shootouts with teams that beat them that way. I don't think that the Atlanta Falcons' blueprint for an NFC South title is a top 10 defense. It'd be great if it happens, but I can't really foresee that unless a dozen different things fall exactly into place for them. I don't know that that's necessarily going to happen. Isaiah Oliver becomes a Pro Bowler, stuff like that. So I don't really see them as a top 10. They could be good. They could be better than they were last year, for sure, with health. But they don't need a top-10 defense. They'd be happy just with a opportunistic, get the ball back to Matt Ryan, a good field position with some sudden change or some turnover type of defense.
Yeah, you mentioned this, and I'm going to put you on the spot here because you said that's not necessarily the blueprint for them to win the South in 2019. What, in your mind, is?
I think it's just being, it's being a little more balanced. It's not necessarily all Matt Ryan all the time. Getting back to running the ball, Devontae Freeman being healthy, Smith taking the next step, the offensive line being a lot better. I think being a top 10 offense, for sure. I think they have to be that, and maybe they will be. I think their cutter is much better coach than Steve Sarkisian. And then defensively, again, create turnovers, stay healthy. I mean, this team, I think its depth was exposed a little bit last year. You look at the big names and you say, wow, the starting 22 is really good. And then we found out last year, well, when you lose a few guys, they don't really have the depth behind them. So I think they would have to have a lucky year injury-wise. It's still a really tough division. I'm not saying they can't win it because they obviously had star power for it, but I think that they need a very good, balanced offense that takes advantage of its opportunities in the red zone. And the defense needs to be opportunistic and stay healthy. And then you catch a couple breaks along the way. Every team needs to. You need, you know, maybe Cam Newton misses some time and the Carolina Panthers, you know, finish 8-8 or something like that. So there is a path. I can see them winning the division. I mean, they're a very good team at their top end, but they're going to need some things to definitely go better than they did last year.
Short answer, 30 seconds or less. Is Dan Quinn in trouble with another 8-8, 7-9, 9-7 type season?
And I think that 8-8 is kind of the cutoff. If he goes 9-7, no. If he goes 7-9, yes, he's in trouble. But if he goes 8-8, but they look a little bit better. And all 8-8s are the same. I would say he at least needs to go 8-8, though. I mean, if he goes anything less, I think he's in real trouble. We'll see what happens if he goes 8-8.
Less than basically 3 weeks, almost two, until the Falcons take training camp in Flowery Branch. Frank Swam talking it over with us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Thanks so much for the time, Frank. We appreciate it.
Yep, no doubt.
Appreciate Frank joining us on the WadeFord.com hotline. And also interesting comments about Vic Beasley, him being in a contract year, and comments that we heard earlier today, Julio Jones saying that he does not plan to hold out, even if he doesn't get a new contract by the 15th of July. So it'll be interesting to see if that plays itself out over here in the next couple of days, as again, we are less than 2 weeks away from Flowery Branch report dates for the Falcons, getting ready for the Hall of Fame game against Denver on August the 1st, here on your home of the Falcons, 92.9 The Game. Interesting Falcons note that came out earlier tonight from our Paul Crane that we'll share with you on the other side of the update. And more on the NBA's potential revolt from the governors. I'll explain next when we continue. The Overnight Show, Will Polonchuk here with you on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com, and the radio.com app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com. Willie P. back here with you. Producer Marshall spinning the tunes. And we'd love to hear from you, 404-741-0929. Last call for phone calls, anything you want to get into. We were talking about the juiced baseball earlier, about the baseball All-Star game. What do you want as a Braves fan at the trade deadline? We'll get back into some of the NBA discussion in a moment. I did want to bring this note to the forefront as it just came across my wire. Earlier this evening, our Paul Crane, here from 92.9 The Game, was reporting he's been told, and he's reporting, that the Hawks could be in the market to sign free agent forward Amari Stoudemire to a veteran minimum deal if he is healthy. Of course, the Hawks still, with a variety of trades that they have, are still short one roster spot. They did make the swap today involving Amari Spellman, which, by the way, you know, if you didn't see that one coming from a mile away, all you needed to do was look at Spellman's waistline. Now, I know I have no room to talk, but I'm also not making $1.9 million to play basketball for the Atlanta Hawks. He, of course, was the 30th pick in last year's draft, all appeared in just 46 games for the Hawks this season, averaged 5.9 points, 4.2 rebounds, in just 17 and a half minutes per game before ending the season earlier with the injury. He acknowledged in January the one reason he didn't see much time for the Hawks was because of his weight. He said, pretty much I was fat, had to lose weight, and that's what allowed me to get back. He did spend some time in the G League and returned a little bit slimmer, but did have a high ankle sprain, was a part of the summer league, but didn't exactly give you at least the opportunity from that perspective to bring that to the table. Damian Jones, in return, he appeared in only 25 games for the Warriors over the first 2 years of his time with Golden State. He was promoted, started 22 games at center. He had a torn pectoral muscle, briefly returned at the end of the playoffs, just 3.5 points per contest, 2.3 rebounds per game. So change of scenery for both guys. They take a flyer on this guy, but the Stoudemire news could be interesting. He just recently had a workout at the NBA Summer League for assembled teams. Among those there were the New York Knicks, his former team, and at least gathering by this information from Paul that it does seem like the Hawks were there. And right now, Atlanta, after getting its first victory in the Summer League, 87-67 over the Pacers, they get a very good evening from Jordan Siebert, who had 21 points in 17 minutes, 18 from Charlie Brown, McCall had 15 as well. Thomas Winbush had 10. DeAndre Hunter did not play as a result because of illness, so he did not play. Bruno Fernando did have 6 points in 25 minutes. Again, still no Cam Reddish. 404-741-0929. Let's go to Sal in Carrollton, who's joining us on Sports Radio 929 The Game. What's up, Al? How are you?
I'm good. I was going to call and tell you about, the whole pass and gas thing?
Yes.
Okay, so it wasn't the place, it was the reaction that happened. I was actually in the car with my girlfriend. I locked the windows, rolled them up, passed gas, and she wound up throwing up in my car.
Oh, no.
Yeah. We found out she was pregnant like a couple days later, but it wasn't as funny as I thought it would be by locking the windows and rolling them up.
So you basically I don't want to use the term on the air, but you basically created a smelly situation for her. That is in reference to the non-sports story of the day. If you missed it earlier, the non-sports story of the day that made me snicker and smile, the Kansas City suburb police department that was able to sniff out a suspect wanted on a felony controlled substance possession charge, and they found him as a result of a loud passed gas noise.
You are nothing but a piece of crap. You emit a foul and unpleasant odor.
They were looking around, and like Kramer said, you stink. As a result of that, they were able to arrest the wanted suspect, basically from Clay County in Missouri. If you've got a felony warrant for your arrest, the cops are looking for you, and you pass gas so loud it gives up your hiding spot, you're definitely having a poop emoji type day. That was Sal Carrington. That's pretty good. That's cruel and an unusual punishment there. That you know. The way that the call screener, Marshall really prepared me well for that, because he kept it about as organic as possible, and apparently so did he. Oh, man, I have no other way to transition out of that and say that stinks. Apparently Russell Westbrook, so this is odd. So, again,
what? You guys led us to this. Thank you.
Apparently, Oklahoma City, as a result of basically getting every first-round draft pick and every draft pick of the future from the Los Angeles Clippers, now decides that they want to embrace the tank. Embrace the tank. Because they look over at the Atlanta Hawks because they embrace the tank. Embrace the tank. Unlike the Hornets, who don't want to embrace the tank, and went to go after Terry Rozier, and they will not embrace the tank. They will embrace the ultimate of the NBA. But as a result, the Russell Westbrook situation developing in Oklahoma City, apparently, according to ESPN, Westbrook is eyeing a potential Miami visit, wanting to go to the Heat, who, of course, very oddly, in my mind, acquired Jimmy Butler this offseason in a move that made me go, huh? Because Jimmy Butler must have hated Philadelphia so much that he wanted to go play for the Miami Heat. And I've heard both people tell me over the course of this offseason, and one of them was DeShaun Tate, who we will have on tomorrow's program, our 92.9 The Game NBA expert and basketball expert at large. Yeah, he will join us on tomorrow's program. He is among those who've told me, look, it's not always about the winning. It's about the lifestyle, comfort level, and obviously the bright lights of South Beach that are part of the reason. But now, if Russell Westbrook joins Jimmy Butler, then that's a team. But also that brings new credence to the question I asked earlier about with when it comes to Reed Forgrave, who joined us earlier from CBSSports.com on the NBA, a team that is in the forefront that might shrink back to the ranks of the periphery and basically become irrelevant in the NBA. That could be the Oklahoma City Thunder. Because as long as they still have Russ, and granted, Russ, whether you think his prime is near up or is up or whatever, I think he still he has the single-handed ability, I think, to still perhaps lead you to a playoff appearance in what is now a very wide-open Western Conference. But, be that as it may, him leaving would really just give you the embrace of the tank. The Thunder have six future first-round draft picks after the trade with the Clippers involving Paul George and the Jeremy Grant trade involved with the Denver Nuggets that also has two first-round picks, 2021 and 2023, via the Miami Heat, ironically enough. And, of course, they're trying to get themselves as much star-level veteran talent without the benefit of salary cap space or many coveted future assets to peddle in deals, according to ESPN straight up. Real quick, just to put a bow on the thing from Bill Roden, it's going to be very interesting in the next 4 years what relations are going to be like between the NBA and its Players Association, because if the CBA comes up and there's an opt-out from either the players or the owners, it'd be very interesting to see if a lockout happens because of the constant movement from the NBA players away from certain franchises towards certain others. We did get a tweet that suggested, look, the NBA still has free agency. This is from Alan, who tweets me at Willie P. Style. You have free agency. Players are going to play where they want to play, and that's it. Teams are just going to have to draft players. That's what Golden State did. They were not a player's destination to go to, and they've turned into one. Look, I believe that that is the case. But I do believe that something needs to be done about the player tampering with each other, because what Kawhi Leonard did was savage and I think should be illegal and not on the NBA's bylaws. We'll wrap it up, tell you what was left on the cutting room floor when we come back here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Special thanks on the program today to our guests, Reed Forgrave of CBSSports.com, also Joe Patrick, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game baseball analyst, for joining us. Also Frank Schwab, interview we had earlier in this week that we replayed for you earlier this hour, talking about the Falcon offseason. Among the things left on the cutting room floor, there's a senator in West Virginia who says that he's proposing a bill that would prevent federal government from providing funding for the 2026 FIFA World Cup until the United States Soccer Federation agrees to equal pay for its men's and women's national teams. Interesting. Goes to the discussion we were talking about the other night involving equal pay. He says no federal funds may be appropriated or otherwise made available to provide support for the 2026 World Cup, including support for a host city, until the date in which the USSF agrees to provide equitable pay. Very interesting situation, of course, involving the equal pay debate in women's and men's soccer. Of course, the women winning their fourth world championship, the men losing in the finals of the Gold Cup to Mexico, 1-0 Sunday evening. I don't know how to get into the Puka Williams Kansas debate, just because never going to know what actually happened. But if the truth is close to the police report, there's no reason he should ever play college football ever again, in my opinion. And despite the fact that this man apparently grabbed his girlfriend, according to police report, and punched her in the stomach, and after being kicked off the team, he has since been reinstated by Les Miles, the Kansas running back, and he's going to play after a one-game suspension. Combine that, of course, with the audio we heard earlier in Kansas City today with Tyreek Hill, and potentially getting off with either a minimal suspension or a scot-free situation involving him after audio, the full audio was played between him and his wife that outlined him basically denying ever abusing their child. Such a weird situation between those two, and really nothing else to say other than it's sad that those situations have to exist. But again, that was all left on the cutting room floor. We had some Falcon stuff as well that we might get back into tomorrow. A lot of college football for you on tomorrow's overnight show. We'll be back here with you 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. We'll talk to Deshaun Tate on the NBA and the Hawks Summer League from his time in Vegas. We'll ask him his observations. Ross Dellinger, my good friend, college football writer for Sports Illustrated, I'll ask him about the Dogs, about the SEC, what to look forward to for SEC Media Days, and the next wave of schools talking about alcohol in the SEC among the common public. For producer Marshall Parker, I'm Will Pelagic. You've been listening to The Overnight Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com. Shake it out.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.